But if folly fears some evil, she is burdened by it in the very moment of awaiting it, just as if it had actually come, already suffering in apprehension whatever she fears she may suffer. Just as in the body, symptoms of latent ill health precede the disease. There is, for example, a certain weak sluggishness, a lassitude, which is not the result of any work, a trembling and a shivering that pervades the limbs. So the feeble spirit is shaken by its ills a long time before it is overcome by them. It anticipates them, and totters before its time. But what is greater madness than to be tortured by the future, and not to save your strength for the actual suffering, but to invite and bring on wretchedness? If you cannot be rid of it, you ought to at least postpone it. Will you not understand that no man should be tormented by the future? The man who has been told that he will have to endure torture 50 years from now is not disturbed thereby, unless he has leaped over the intervening years and has projected himself into the trouble that is destined to arrive a generation later. In the same way, souls that enjoy being sick and that seize upon excuses for sorrow are saddened by events long past and effaced from the records. Past and future are both absent. We feel neither of them. But there can be no pain except as the result of what you feel. Farewell. Letter 75. On the Diseases of the Soul. You have been complaining that my letters to you are rather carelessly written. Now, who talks carefully unless he also desires to talk affectedly? I prefer that my letters should be just what my conversation would be if you and I were sitting in one another's company or taking walks together, spontaneous and easy. For my letters have nothing strained or artificial about them. If it were possible, I should prefer to show, rather than speak, my feelings. Even if I were arguing a point, I should not stamp my foot, or toss my arms about, or raise my voice. But I should leave that sort of thing to the orator, and should be content to have conveyed my feelings to you without having either embellished them or lowered their dignity. I should like to convince you entirely of this one fact, that I feel whatever I say, that I not only feel it, but am wedded to it. It is one sort of kiss which a man gives his mistress, and another which he gives his children. Yet in the father's embrace also, holy and restrained as it is, plenty of affection is disclosed. I prefer, however, that our conversation on matters so important should not be meager and dry, for even philosophy does not renounce the company of cleverness. One should not, however, bestow very much attention upon mere words. Let this be the kernel of my idea. Let us say what we feel, and feel what we say. Let speech harmonize with life. That man has fulfilled his promise, who is the same person both when you see him and when you hear him. We shall not fail to see what sort of man he is, and how large a man he is, if only he is one and the same. Our words should aim not to please, but to help. If, however, you can attain eloquence without painstaking, and if you either are naturally gifted or can gain eloquence at slight cost, make the most of it and apply it to the noblest uses. But let it be of such a kind that it displays facts rather than itself. It and the other arts are wholly concerned with cleverness, but our business here is the soul. A sick man does not call in a physician who is eloquent, but if it so happens that the physician who can cure him likewise discourses elegantly about the treatment which is to be followed, the patient will take it in good part. For all that, he will not find any reason to congratulate himself on having discovered a physician who is eloquent, for the case is no different from that of a skilled pilot who is also handsome. Why do you tickle my ears? Why do you entertain me? There is other business at hand. I am to be cauterized, operated upon, or put on a diet. That is why you were summoned to treat me. You are required to cure a disease that is chronic and serious, one which affects the general weal. You have as serious a business on hand as a physician has during a plague. Are you concerned about words? Rejoice this instant if you can cope with things. When shall you learn all that there is to learn? When shall you so plant in your mind that which you have learned that it cannot escape? When shall you put it all into practice? For it is not sufficient merely to commit these things to memory, like other matters. They must be practically tested. He is not happy who only knows them, but he who does them. You reply, what? Are there no degrees of happiness below your happy man? Is there a sheer descent immediately below wisdom? I think not. For though he who makes progress is still numbered with the fools, yet he is separated from them by a long interval. Among the very persons who are making progress, there are also great spaces intervening. They fall into three classes, as certain philosophers believe. First, come those who have not yet attained wisdom, but have already gained a place nearby. Yet, even that which is not far away is still outside. These, if you ask me, are